5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hello, everyone. Welcome in to all of you beautiful souls. Welcome to Morning Invest, the only morning news show that's outside of the billionaire matrix that drives the narrative of mainstream media. Coming up on today's show, in keeping them honest, the Matt Gaetz story, Congressman Matt Gaetz. This whole story is, you know, I've been waiting on this thing because it's just been getting creepier and creepier by the day. We can't ignore it anymore. And this morning, he is inching closer to being totally finished. And the New York Times this morning is basically calling him a liar. Is Gaetz about to resign? We've got some breaking news on this developing story out of Washington. It's rocking Republicans in Washington. Of course, a huge Trump supporter is Matt Gaetz. Plus, in your stimulus update this morning, progressives are not happy about Biden's infrastructure plan. In fact, some think it's laughably small. We're going to tell you how big this thing could get before it's all said and done. We will hear from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Plus, Ron Paul weighing in. Ron Paul warning that the U.S. dollar is already collapsing. And you know what Ron Paul's really good at? He's really good at predicting economic collapses. And everyone ignores him. And then he ends up being accurate and true and nails it. So we should probably be paying attention to what Ron Paul has to say. Also, we're seeing this fourth wave of COVID now officially underway in the United States. We're going to show you the states where we have the biggest hotspots. And Bitcoin hits a new record overnight. It's on its way to $100,000 or $100,000 in value. Boy, we got a jam-packed show for you today. So if you want to be more informed and learn something new every morning, you should join our daily newsletter. It's sent out by email right to your inbox every morning between 6 a.m. and 7 a.m. The best part is it's totally free. So simply go to morninginvest.com, put in your email address, and you'll be added to our list. It's morninginvest.com. It supports our show, keeps us doing what we're doing. Plus, you get an awesome newsletter first thing in the morning. Okay, we're going to get to the news in a minute, but I have to tell you about men's health here because, you know, this happens all the time. You know, men's health doesn't get much attention. And that's partly our fault, guys. We don't like talking. We don't like going to the doctor. We definitely don't like talking about sensitive issues. Well, here's the thing. A lot of men's health issues really have some simple solutions. And that's where RxMD.com, they come in for that. They're going to help you with this. RxMD makes getting prescription ED medications easy, all done online from the comfort of home, then delivered right to your front door. No office visits, no talking to a receptionist, super simple. And right now, sample packs. You get sample packs of ED medications. They're available for listeners of Morning Invest. They've set these aside just for you, so you can try it, see if it's a fit for you and your life. And I'll tell you how to get those in a second. So it's simpler than ever to get started. Here's how it works. You fill out a quick medical survey questionnaire on their website, and a doctor reviews your situation, prescribes you the ED medication you need, if appropriate. Then the medication is shipped right to your door with free two-day shipping. Very, very simple. So here's how you get it. It's never been easier to take control of your health. Those sample packs right now, get those sample pack prescriptions I mentioned, are available at rexmd.com/invest. So go to rexmd.com/invest to get started. That's rexmd.com/invest. So our thanks to them for their support. All right, we've got some breaking news this morning on the economy. So let's talk about, let's kick that off this morning. Just a few moments ago, we've got the economic news. The U.S. economy adding a whopping 916,000 jobs last month, while the unemployment rate fell to 6%. That's from 6.2%, the government said on Friday. So let's put this in some context here. And why this matters. This blowout for the job gains shows how vaccines and the economic reopening are basically, it's like taking a fish. It's like taking a fish and putting it in a nice, egg wash. What do you call that? An egg wash where you dip it in like batter and you throw it in the oil and you cook it up breading? Like some fish and chips. Like breading. That's the word I'm looking for. Thanks for waking up with us this morning. Breading. Talking my brain. Wake up. So anyway, it's juicing right now. It's like juicing, getting it all battered and lathered up right now. And economists had been expecting an increase of only 675,000 jobs. So this number is huge. 916,000 jobs. I can't wait for like President Trump to come out probably later today and issue a statement and be like, that's because of me or something. You know he's going to do it. Like before he goes and plays golf this weekend, he's going to send it like some sort of a put it out on paper and say, yep, that's my doing. It's because of me. So this is a pretty big deal. And if we want to take a closer look at these numbers, it comes after the economy added 379,000 jobs in February. So 916,000 jobs. And they're saying, look, this drops it from 6% to down to 6.2%. But remember, how many people just left the labor force? So we can get excited about these numbers. Great. It's a positive sign as things start to reopen. But now we're starting to see that the fact that we're going to experience this fourth wave of COVID, and we now know that there's, now certain states are almost might have to go back under lockdown up in the Northeast again, New York, Michigan. And so there's so many people that have left the labor force who don't get included in these numbers. As I've always talked about, we can't necessarily trust these numbers, but 300,000 additional over the 600, that's a pretty big deal. So, hey, some positivity. Let's start it off with some positivity this morning, shall we? Shall we? How many of you watching right now have gotten your jobs back? Like a lot of you, I know, were in a situation where you were like furloughed, laid off, set aside, and you told at some point you'd be able to come back. And no, these are not seasonal jobs. I mean, these are full-time jobs. So I see someone in the chat right now, but, a lot of people were still waiting to see if they're going to get their job back and they never did. So we'll keep our eye on these numbers. We'll see how these are adjusted next month. If they get adjusted back down again, we'll see. All right, let's get to it in keeping them honest this morning. Matt Gaetz, his political career is imploding in real time. Now, look, we've covered Andrew Cuomo. We've covered stories when I think it has broad implications on people that these people represent. And now Matt Gaetz, who has, of course, been out there championing President Trump. He's been, of course, involved in the lie that President Trump won the election and tried to overturn the election, even tried to get Liz Cheney thrown out of Congress by going to Wyoming. Well, his political career is imploding in real time, faster than social media can process it. First, on Tuesday, let's kind of wind back the clock a little bit. News broke about an open investigation into whether Gaetz paid at least one underage girl to cross state lines with him, to cross state lines. That would constitute child sex trafficking, which is a federal crime. Then hours later, he went on TV to give that now famous and disastrous interview on Tucker Carlson's show, where he basically tried to put out a careful, I was watching him, like it was like a carefully worded explanation. Like it was almost like he was reading something. And then he then mentioned the possibility of him being in photographs. He kind of like floated it with underage prostitutes. Oh, and by the way, in that same interview with Tucker Carlson, he said he was being blackmailed for $25 million. And you can just watch Tucker's forehead. Like, you know, I've worked with Tucker for many, many years. When he starts to furrow his brow, he's going, "What the heck are you talking about?" This is getting weirder. And when Tucker does this, that's when you know things are weird. So here I want to play part of this interview because this thing starts to unfold and you can see it on Tucker's face. So this is where it all kind of started. He immediately kind of went on television to try to put the fire out if he could.
Just a couple of hours ago, late this afternoon, the New York Times ran a story saying that Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz is under federal investigation for playing some role in sex trafficking and potentially having a relationship with a 17-year-old girl. There are very few details in major news outlets tonight about this story. We have no background on it all and not even any very informed questions. Instead, we've invited Congressman Gaetz on the show to respond to these stories and give us his view of them. Congressman, thanks so much for coming on. Appreciate it. So this is obviously a serious allegation. Tell us what the truth is from your perspective.
It is a horrible allegation, and it is a lie. The New York Times is running a story that I have traveled with a 17-year-old woman, and that is verifiably false. People can look at my travel records and see that that is not the case. What is happening is an extortion of me and my family involving a former Department of Justice official. On March 16th, my father got a text message demanding a meeting wherein a person demanded $25 million in exchange for making horrible sex trafficking allegations against me go away. Our family was so troubled by that, we went to the local FBI. And the FBI and the Department of Justice were so concerned about this attempted extortion of a member of Congress that they asked my dad to wear a wire, which he did with the former Department of Justice official. Tonight, I am demanding that the Department of Justice and the FBI release the audio recordings that were made under their supervision and at their direction, which will prove my innocence and that will show that these allegations aren't true. They're merely intended to try to bleed my family out of money. And this former Department of Justice official tomorrow was supposed to be contacted by my father so that specific instructions could be given regarding the wiring of $4.5 million as a down payment on this bribe. I don't think it's a coincidence that tonight, somehow, the New York Times is leaking this information, smearing me, and ruining the investigation that would likely result in one of the former colleagues of the current DOJ being brought to justice for trying to extort me and my family.
Okay, that's a heck of a story to spin, isn't it? Well, now there's a third entry in this story. So the New York Times is now reporting that they've seen evidence, actual receipts, paper receipts, that show Matt Gaetz used cash apps like Apple Pay to send money to women. The women were allegedly recruited online for sex and received cash payments, according to the New York Times. Ooh, that's pretty big. And of course, this all links back to Joel Greenberg, the former tax collector from Seminole County, Florida, who is in a heap of trouble himself. He's good friends with Matt Gaetz. They all swim in the same waters together, of course. Investigators believe that Greenberg met the woman through websites that connect people who go on dates in exchange for gifts, fine dining, travel, and allowances, and that he introduced Gaetz to the women. And then one of the women allegedly had sex with both Gaetz and Greenberg, and an unidentified associate of theirs in Florida Republican politics. Like, all at the same time, mind you. Gaetz is denying any of those allegations. He continues to. The New York Times, though, has reviewed receipts from this Cash App, which is a mobile payments app, and Apple Pay, that show that payments from Gaetz and Mr. Greenberg to one of the women, and a payment from Mr. Greenberg to a second woman. The women told their friends that the payments were for sex with the two men, according to two people who were familiar with these conversations. Again, according to the New York Times. And according to this reporting, the encounters took place between 2019 and 2020. Gaetz and Greenberg reportedly instructed the women to meet at certain times and places, often at hotels all around Florida, and would tell them the amount of money they were willing to pay. What about the drugs? Well, there were also drugs, too. Apparently, the men and women allegedly took ecstasy before doing all of this. Matt Gaetz was one of the drug takers, reportedly.
He doesn't have
according to the New York Times.
What do you call those vanity plates?
And UK Mail.
Those license plates that have a name on it.
Wouldn't that be
great? Wasn't his Lolita or something like that?
Right. It was, yeah, don't stand so close to me. Don't stand.
But he's too young to have been in that crowd, right? The Lolita Express crowd?
I think so. Yeah, what year was that? That was like the 70s, Lolita Express? I don't know, but man, they say it like, it's like in those like late night infomercials, like, or like Columbo used to say, you know, like, well, wait a minute, there's just one more thing. One more thing. I have one more thing. So this morning, there's more. A lot more. Gaetz reportedly asked the women to help find others who might be interested in having sex with him and his friends, too. And they have the text messages. And asked about if they're, and asked if, asked about their relationship, Gaetz told, said, basically said, told the women to stay that he had paid for hotel rooms and dinners as part of their dates. That's what he was paying them for. And that's almost verbatim what he told Tucker on Tuesday night. Oh, so he's like, oh, providing flights and hotel rooms for people that you're dating or who are of legal age is not a crime? Or his exact words?
So a couple of obvious questions that come to mind. And again, just to restate, this just happened. Don't have any other information beyond what we've already said and you have said. Who is this Department of Justice former employee who's trying to extort the money from you, you say?
His name is David McGee. He was a top official in the leadership in the Northern District of Florida as a prosecutor. He currently works at the Beggs and Lane law firm. As a matter of fact, one of the recordings that was made at the FBI and Department of Justice request occurred at that law firm. And the money that was supposed to be paid today that would have shown even more evidence of David McGee's work in this extortion scheme, that was foiled by the New York Times story. And I believe that's why this this horrible information and these terrible allegations have been used this evening.
I love Tucker's face. He's like, huh, I don't believe a word you're saying right now. It even gets more hilarious because then he basically throws Tucker under the bus. And turns out Tucker was pretty pissed about this. Watches this unfold. He basically says, I was at dinner and you were there, Tucker. You got to meet this girl. Tucker's like, I'm sorry, I have no recollection of this at all. I don't recall ever having. So now he gets dragged into it. So now he has to maybe like if the FBI wants to call him and ask, so did you meet this girl? Like, were you at it? He has to deal with this now.
So you're, and I'll get to the investigation in a sec, but you're saying that David McGee was motivated by greed. He was trying to extort money from your family. That's his motivation, you're saying.
I know that there was a demand for money in exchange for a commitment that he could make this investigation go away along with his co-conspirators. They even claimed to have specific connections inside the Biden White House. Now, I don't know if that's true. They were promising that Joe Biden would pardon me. Obviously, I don't need a pardon. I'm not seeking a pardon. I have not done anything improper or wrong. But what I am troubled by is the real motivation for all of this. You know, just tonight, Ted Lieu, a Democrat, is calling on me to be removed from the House Judiciary Committee. And I believe we are in an era of our politics now, Tucker, where people are smeared to try to take them out of the conversation. I'm not the only person on screen right now who's been falsely accused of a terrible sex act. You were accused of something that you did not do. And so you know what this feels like. You know the pain it can bring to your family. And you know how it just puts people on defense when you're accused of something so salacious and awful. But it did not happen. It is not true. And the fact that it is the basis of this attempt to extort my family tells a lot. And if the FBI and Department of Justice will release the tapes that they are in possession of, the American people will see what is really going on.
So just throws Tucker under the bus, too. Like, I know I'm not the only one on the screen right now who was involved and had an issue that had, you know, that was a smear. You did, too, Tucker. Like, you know, just deflect off of me. What about your situation? Can we talk about that for a second? And by the way, he's saying that the Department of Justice is playing politics, that that's the motivation. By the way, we now know that this investigation, according to reports, started under Bill Barr, who's Trump's attorney general, and who, you know, he loved Trump, right? They were good buddies. He loves Trump. So this started under the Trump attorney general in DOJ, not under Biden.
You just referred to a mentally ill viewer who accused me of a sex crime 20 years ago. And it was not true. I'd never met the person. But I do agree with you that being accused falsely is one of the worst things that can happen. And you do see it a lot. Let's go back to the investigation.
Yeah. Thanks for trying to distract the audience by talking about me for a second. But let's go back to the investigation, which you're still not answering my questions about. I'm trying to like get some answers here, and you're playing politics here. You're jumping all around. I mean, you know, he pretty much said, you know, that escorts and prostitutes, he basically said exactly what he told the escorts and prostitutes to say. He says it to Tucker. Okay, watch.
You say that it was or is underway. There was an investigation. What is the basis of that investigation? What is the allegation? Is that really not very clear from these news stories?
Yeah, again, I only know what I've read in the New York Times. I can say that actually you and I went to dinner about 2 years ago. Your wife was there, and I brought a friend of mine. You'll remember her.
Again, I'm just going to keep trying to throw you under the bus. You were there. You were there with your wife, and remember her? I brought one of these, you know, I don't know, prostitutes to dinner? Whatever.
And she was actually threatened by the FBI, told that if she wouldn't cop to the fact that somehow I was involved in some pay-for-play scheme, that she could face trouble. And so I do believe that there are people at the Department of Justice who are trying to smear me, you know, providing for flights and hotel rooms for people that you're dating who are of legal age is not a crime. And I'm just troubled that the lack of any sort of legitimate investigation into me would then convert into this extortion attempt.
I don't remember the woman you're speaking of or the context at all, honestly, but I...
I have...
As a matter of fact, I don't think we've ever eaten together.
Right. I've actually never met you face-to-face, you know? Oh... It's hilarious.
It's like womp, womp, womp,
womp. Sorry, I have no idea what you're talking about. But he right there admits. He's like, so wait a minute. Buying hotel rooms for women I'm dating is a crime? Flying them around, you know, paying them for sex, is that a crime? No one told me.
I mean, heck, it's taxpayer money. What the heck do you care?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. He was like one step away from saying something even more dumb than he already is saying here. He's like, you know, Tucker, I thought, look, it's not even my money. It's taxpayer money. What's wrong with that? I'm using taxpayer money for prostitutes. Yeah, is that okay?
I'm using taxpayer money. She's a taxpayer. Why shouldn't I?
Right. It's probably her money coming back to her anyway. You know, I want to cut taxes, and this is my way of helping people.
It's my stimulus, if you will.
She asked to see my stimmy. Someone, TJ in the chat says, what's up with these men buying their dates juice boxes?
I would like to know who, so they're saying there is a 17-year-old girl who you had a relationship with. Is that true? And who are they? Who is this girl? What are they talking about at the New York Times?
The person doesn't exist. I have not had a relationship with a 17-year-old. That is totally false. The allegation, as I read it in the New York Times, is that I've traveled with some 17-year-old in some relationship. That is false, and records will bear that out to be false.
How long has this investigation been going on? Do you know?
I don't know.
When were you first informed of it?
You know, again, I really saw.
Can't answer that question. I, when did you know about this? Clearly you're lying. clearly you knew about this. The whole fact that this story started coming out where we were going to hear him working for Newsmax. Like, if you missed that, just a few days ago before the story came out, suddenly, mysteriously, there was this story in the press about how Matt Gaetz was considering leaving Congress, going to retire from Congress, and go work for Newsmax. Which is really odd, right? Like, who, you don't leave Congress, especially young, and he's like an up-and-comer, hoping to eventually probably run for president. You know, he's carrying the mantle of Trumpism. Like, he's going to leave Congress? No, he's not. No way. You leave Congress when you're 85, you know. You're not leaving it when you're 38 years old. And suddenly that story, and then later that night, of course, this story hits. So clearly he's known about this. And of course, to throw the DOJ under Biden under the bus with Merrick Garland, Attorney General, is ridiculous. When this was started, according to these reports, under the Trump administration, with a Bill Barr, Attorney General.
I saw this as a deeply troubling challenge for my family on March 16th when people were, you know, talking.
So he just lied, right? He said, I found this to be deeply troubling on March 16th. But in the beginning part of the interview, he says he just learned about this in the New York Times. Did I not hear that correctly? Am I wrong about that? I just learned about this in the New York Times, Tucker. So when I started getting worried about this was on March 16th, though. That was 2 weeks ago. So then when you're reading the New York Times, then you knew about this already. Okay. Keep making stuff up as you go along here. You're literally lying right in the same interview, the same question. That's why Tucker asked it three times, because you didn't answer it.
About a minor, and that there were pictures of me with child prostitutes. That's obviously false. There will be no such pictures because no such thing happened. But really, on March 16th was when this got going from the extortion standpoint.
So what happens next? I mean, you can see there is this investigation, I guess a criminal investigation. I'm not quite sure where the sex trafficking part comes in. For the fifth time, I don't really understand this story very well. But where does it go from here? I mean, you've made an allegation against someone by name on the air and accused him of trying to extort millions of dollars from your family. What happens tomorrow?
Well, what was supposed to happen was the transfer of this money that would have implicated the former colleague of these current DOJ officials. But that's obviously not going to happen tomorrow because the New York Times story was leaked in order to quell that investigative effort. So here's what needs to happen next. The FBI and the Department of Justice must release the tapes that are in their possession that were done at their direction. Those tapes will show that I am innocent and that the whole concept of sex charges against me was really just a way to try to bleed my family out of money and probably smear my name, because I am a well-known, outspoken conservative, and I guess that's out of style in a lot of parts of the country right now.
Matt Gaetz, I appreciate you coming on tonight.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I have a crowd of people on my catamaran. I got to get out of here.
Oh, yeah, I've got to get back. I've got this party boat behind me. Here I am down in Miami. You see this party boat? See the lights back there? Tucker, I have to go. I have to get back to my prostitutes. We done here? Ugh. I feel like I have to take a shower after watching that interview. Like, you can feel the skeeviness floating off. And he really believes it. Like, he does look, which of the Beavis and Butthead does he look like?
I think he looks like a combination, like if they both came out of the same womb.
I think, well, like if Beavis and Butthead, I think Beavis, who's got the big forehead? Is it
Beavis.
Butthead or
Beavis? They both
Beavis.
Had big foreheads, okay. But is this the way they were drawn? But yeah. He looks like if you took and combined them together.
Oh, Christina Ellis says, like I said, boats and hoes. But his nose is growing like Pinocchio right now. Well, I mean, the story gets even worse, folks, because the FBI has reportedly talked to multiple women involved in the encounters. The DOJ is also investigating whether Gaetz, Greenberg, and other men had sex with the 17-year-old who was part of the initial child sex trafficking investigation. Are you confused yet? My brain hurts.
My brain hurts.
Michael Palin, my favorite.
The greatest. So Gates recently claimed that travel records would prove that he did not. So in the heels of all of this, like after he went on Tucker, he's like, I have travel records. It'll show that I never traveled, didn't have sex with a 17-year-old girl. But the Washington Post decided to verify that and look into it, you know, because he said it. And turns out that's a lie, too. During the Fox interview, he said that he did not have a relationship with the girl and said that travel records would back him up. He also said that he was innocent of any sex trafficking. But the Washington Post dug into this. And Post's Salvador Rizzo looked into the travel records and found nothing at all to support Gates' claim. In fact, I'll put this up on the screen. This is what they found. That's the wrong one. Sorry. That's the wrong one. I apologize. But it says, and I quote, the disclosures that Gates did file with the House Ethics Committee and the Federal Elections Commission regarding official trips, campaign expenses, or speaking events do not include the information that he told Fox News viewers that could be easily checked, Rizzo explained. These forms do not require that Gates list every person who traveled with him on the trips that he disclosed. The whole issue is a bit of a catch-22, Rizzo says. Gates is not required to file disclosures concerning his private life and expenses, but if he somehow used campaign or taxpayer funds for personal matters, there might be a paper trail to follow. Rizzo writes, however, using campaign or taxpayer funds for personal matters would be a crime unto itself, the report continued. We repeatedly asked Gates's chief of staff, Jillian Lane Wyant, his spokesman, Luke Ball, to show us the travel records supposedly debunking the allegations. They received no response. We also sent a text message directly to Gates with our query and got a no reply.
I mean,
so Izzo concludes in the let me just give the conclusion. Okay. He says, we searched through all the available records and found nothing to support Gates' claim. We repeatedly asked his staff to show us the records and heard crickets. We asked Gates directly. Nothing. Radio silence, Rizzo reports at the Washington Post. I mean, this guy is toast.
Now, technically, like I was going to say, since we pay his salary, isn't all of his money he has taxpayer money?
Right. Yeah. Like, yeah. You can look at it that way.
The fact,
by the way, as Joseph points out as in a super chat, thanks, Joseph, for your $5 super chat. I was going to bring this up. You beat me to it, Joseph. That in 2017, he was the only person in Congress to vote against a child sex trafficking law, a human trafficking law. He's like, I can't vote yes for this thing. I do it. Like, he voted no. He's the only member who wakes up that morning. It's like, you know, Congress is voting today on a sex trafficking law. I can't support that kind of stuff. You know, like if a guy wants to take his prostitutes across state lines and wants to sell children into bondage, like who am I as a congressman to say that's not okay? He's the only one to vote against it. I mean, is that not like foreshadowing? Even Fox News, like, listen to Dana Perino, who's like, this guy's a scumbag. So she asks Kevin McCarthy, the leader of the Republicans in the House, like, what's going to happen here? And it was pretty telling to see Kevin McCarthy was kind of like, oh, yeah, I'd easily tell him to leave. Like, he would be thrilled to get rid of this guy.
Will you take any action to remove Matt Gaetz from the Judiciary Committee while he's under investigation by the DOJ over whether he had a sexual relationship with a 17-year-old and paid for her to travel with him? That's something he denies, but that would be a violation of federal sex trafficking laws.
Look, I haven't heard from DOJ. I haven't been able to talk to Matt Gaetz yet. I just read the story. Those are serious implications. If it comes out to be true, yes, we would remove him if that was the case. But right now, as Matt Gaetz says, it is not true, and we don't have any information. So let's get all the information.
So?
Let's just get all the information. Okay. It's pretty easy to do, right? You have the Department of Justice you could just give a phone call to. What's happening here? What's the latest on this thing? So that's the very latest on Matt Gaetz. Will he be leaving office? Will he be retiring? Or will he be forced out? But this alibi is crumbling around him this morning. And that latest piece from the Washington Post just happening moments ago before our show aired. So looks like those travel records that you were telling everyone would, you know, authenticate your story, verify your story, is not true. And there are no travel records. So there you go, Matt. I'd welcome him to come on and talk about it. Matt, if you want to come on here and explain more deeply, we'd love to have you. We'd love to have you.
I did not have sexual relations talk about with that woman.
I did not. I mean, it's like you can see it in his eyes. Like he's like, Tucker, this is I only learned about this last night. I read the New York Times. That's how I found out about it, just like you. Then Tucker asks him again. So, you know, how long has this investigation been going on? Like when? Well, I don't know. But I, you know, when it started affecting my family was 2 weeks ago on the March 16th when I started here. Oh, but I thought you just learned about it last night when you read the New York Times piece. It's interesting. It's interesting. Those two stories just canceled each other out right there, didn't they? Oh boy, I need a shower after that. But I think, you know, that's when you have these congressmen who get up on their sanctimonious soapbox and want to cast aspersions on progressives and other people and want to, you know, hypocritically say that these people do something that I would never do. And then that's exactly what's happening, of course, behind the scenes. You get to give a speech at during the Republican convention and tell us how like America has lost its moral fiber, right? America has drifted because of leftists, right? We need to get back to our moral fiber in the United States. And oh, Matt Gaetz, you're going to lead us there on your boat? Can you maybe pay me on Apple Pay? Thanks, Matt Gaetz. All right, let's talk about the stimulus now. Biden has pissed off a lot of progressives with this stimulus package, and more are coming out overnight. When you dive into this massive stimulus package, you realize that it barely scratches the surface. I'm talking about the new infrastructure plan that President Biden rolled out the other day in Pittsburgh. Kind of going deeper into this now, it barely scratches the surface of what needs to be done in the United States. For instance, let's talk about lead pipes for a second. Lead pipes. So this is making the rounds, and you know, this is reporting from Jeff Stein about Ron Klain, who's the White House chief of staff, emphasized the infrastructure plan would replace all lead pipes and achieve national broadband. He said this to Ryan Lizza, quote, "There are definitely some in the party who think it's too small. There are some who maybe think it's too small. We think it's just right. Just right." And this sort of, you know, this is the backlash that's starting to unfold right now. If Larry Summers is happy with your plan, it is small and garbage and probably designed to benefit corporations. Well, might be right about that, because today this is Wall Street. These are the numbers of Wall Street. This is the highest Wall Street has been, the numbers on the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones. Biden's Wall Street stock market is now higher than Trump. And remember, Trump was telling us that if Biden gets elected, Wall Street will collapse, stock market will crash. Well, actually, that hasn't happened. In fact, yesterday, the S&P 500 broke a new record. So Wall Street is really happy with the boondoggles and money that they will get, all these different companies are going to get.
You know, that just really irritates me then, because I see people complaining here in the chat that they're struggling. And how could they be struggling when those numbers are that high? I don't know who to believe now.
Exactly. Well, you can't believe the people in our chat, right? You've got to believe politicians, David. Like, these are the people that you got to believe, right? So Wall Street's doing great today. And like Biden said, right? Nothing would fundamentally change when I'm elected. Right, he told that to Wall Street bigwigs, right? And look at this. He's right.
No, he lied.
He lied. It got better for them. It got better. By the way, I'm just joking, of course, about the people in our chat. You guys are my favorites. I love you guys. Politicians I do not like and I despise. And then, of course, you see these jobs numbers today. Look at that smiling Joe. Come on, man. U.S. economy added 916,000 jobs in March, crushing expectations. Everyone's doing great. Stock market's doing great. Wall Street's doing great. Big corporations are doing great. Crystal writes this. It's pretty sad when the scope of our national ambitions is just to not actively poison children, referring to the lead pipes. Universal Healthcare tweets, not poisoning people is a pretty low bar, but that's typical of bought-off politicians and their propaganda cheerleaders who pretend to be objective and impartial journalists. Journalists hold politicians' feet to the fire. Propagandists run cover and make excuses for politicians. Ouch. That's exactly right. Looking at all these mainstream media publications over the past few days, it's hilarious to see. All of these publications are like, you know, sweeping, epic, you know. And it is large, don't get me wrong, but it's nowhere nearly as large as even what President Biden had wanted and mentioned in his campaign. All you need to do is go to their campaign website, look at the Kamala Harris Biden website, and even on their website, it's over $7 trillion they want invested in infrastructure. So why'd they start so low? Why so stinking low?
Well, and I saw Sagar yesterday on The Rising. He was talking like, you know, there's all these people asking questions about the infrastructure, but like, how are we going to pay for it? How are we going to pay for it? And Sagar's like, it's infrastructure. It pays for itself. It's by design. It pays for itself. So people need to stop asking. Like they're asking, he said, I can't believe they're not asking that question about the stimulus and stuff. They're asking it more about the infrastructure bill.
Right. Yeah. And you know what toll, you know what? Bridges and tolls. When you have people that are actually using the roads, it builds up our GDP. When they're actually using our infrastructure, it builds up our overall GDP. Right? It's like when you invest in education, education gives back, right? That's how it works. It's the same way with medicine, right? When you invest in preventative medicine, imagine that we don't have to spend as much money on treating all of these problems later.
And you,
if we invest in health up front, imagine what could happen.
Well, and you want to like have these big, like look at all of the vehicles that Amazon puts on the road by their employees going to their building, by their employees delivering packages. Look at UPS. Look at these other companies that are out on the roads all the time. Those companies should be paying something for infrastructure, like not, you know, if it ends up coming back on the people, like there's ways that they could come up with to charge those people because they are the biggest beneficiaries of the infrastructure.
Right. Exactly. And all of the, so we were worried about taxing them. And by the way, businesses use roads, right? Businesses use electrical grids. Businesses use broadband. This idea that like businesses won't, why would we saddle taxpayers and businesses with infrastructure? Why would we make them pay for it? Why would we tax them? Well, I guess they don't use it, do they? But why do they start so low? You know, this, I heard Joe Manchin, the furthest right Democrat, said that he is for a $4 trillion plan. So why did Biden's administration start to get negotiations so small? Good question. Good question. This is my favorite. We're going to do the bare minimum of making sure you aren't being poisoned by the water supply, and we'll call it a day. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, speaking with Rachel Maddow, Rachel pushed her a little bit more on this question of how big she wants this thing. And the number, you're going to wait till you hear the number that AOC gives to Rachel Maddow here about how big this thing could be. And so understanding that really, they're going to take President Biden's really lowball offer here, even lower than what Joe Manchin wants, and they're going to inflate the heck out of this thing. That's what she says. We'll see if it happens.
Biden's infrastructure plan is a big plan. It is full of big ideas, but a lot of the most interesting stories are in the granular details. But again, this is just his opening gambit. This is what he's asking for. What happens to it now is going to be in the hands of the Congress. Joining us now is one of the most influential members of that body, New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Congresswoman, it's great to see you. Thank you so much for making time to be here tonight.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
So, as I know, you saw the president's speech today, and we've all been reading about and learning about what the president is asking for in this American Jobs Plan. What do you think of it?
You know, I think that the vision that President Biden and the administration has laid out, you're right, has surprised a lot of us in a positive way. And in the detail and the thought that's here, the scope of it is really encouraging, except I think the how, that $2.25 trillion over 8 years, I have serious concerns that it's not enough to realize the very inspiring vision that Biden has advanced. And so I believe that those of us here, especially as progressives within the Democratic Party, we know that there is so much more opportunity here. And in order for us to realize this inspiring vision, we need to go way higher. And that's what's going to help us actually deliver on this really promising and inspiring vision that the president has laid out today.
And when you say that it should be bigger, do you want the numbers associated with the things that the president says he wants done just to get bigger, just to do more of the things he's saying he wants to do? Or are there whole new categories of policy that you'd like to see folded into this bill that aren't there now?
I think there are a couple areas there. One is that, first of all, you know, this is $2.25 trillion over 8 years. For context, because these huge numbers are hard to understand, for context, we passed an almost $2 trillion COVID relief package that's supposed to last us 1 year with some provisions lasting up to 2 years. So the $1,400 stimulus checks, that big package that we felt in our lives, were deployed on a shorter timeline. So I think that if we need to really have some shorter timelines, some urgency, greater urgency in this package, and I think that some of these investments need to be greater. So for example, let's take public housing. This plan, this Build Back Better plan, it advocates for a total national investment of $40 billion in public housing nationwide. Sounds great, right? Except when you consider the fact that the New York City public housing system needs $40 billion alone just to get up to code. During the wintertime, people run out of heat. They don't have hot water. They don't have electricity sometimes. There are holes in people's walls. The New York City Public Housing Authority needs $40 billion alone just so that its residents can live in dignified housing because they've been underinvested in and starved, frankly, by Republican Congresses and administrations for so long. So for us to actually invest in national public housing infrastructure, we need to do way more in order for us to deliver on this promise in terms of a price tag there. Now, in terms of scope, I think, again, I really do have to commend some of these investments that are in here. And some of these details, like exclusionary zoning, are things that progressives have been talking about for a long time. So there is a lot of credit there. But on climate, we can also go more, we can go deeper, and we can have a more integrated approach in how we push on this issue. Again, I do commend the administration and its scope, but in order for us to meet that vision, I have real concerns that $2.2 trillion isn't actually going to get us there. So we're going to have to make deeper investments to actually renew public housing, to repeal the Faircloth Amendment, to increase our housing stock in the United States. You know, and this, at the end of the day, is one of the greatest sources of income inequality in the country. It's rooted in housing and real estate.
Yeah, absolutely it is.
in terms of how this is going to move, obviously, this is the Biden administration's second big legislative lift. And I think we have to think of them as a living, breathing organism that learns lessons along the way. Clearly, I think a lot of what was going on with the COVID relief bills, they were thinking about things they wish they had done better or handled differently under the Obama administration. Now I think they're going to be approaching this infrastructure bill, learning the lessons that they just learned for what happened with COVID relief. And it was, I think, a surprise to many in the Beltway when Joe Biden said for COVID relief he wanted $1.9 trillion. Everybody assumed that would get whittled way down and some much smaller package would ultimately pass. It didn't. It did get cut down a little bit, but not that much. It was basically a $1.9 trillion plan. Sounds to me, from what I hear you saying tonight, that on this one, what may happen is that President Biden may say, listen, today in Pittsburgh, I want $2.25 trillion over 8 years. But when it lands in the House, you and your colleagues may say $2.25 trillion is a starting point, but this needs to be a bigger bill. This needs to get larger before the Senate even gets a look at it. Is it fair to expect that that may be the way this goes?
Absolutely. You know, if we could wave a magic wand and there and progressives in the House were able to name any number and get it through, which obviously isn't the case. But if we're looking at ideals and what we think is the actual investment that can create tens of millions of good union jobs in this country, that can shore up our healthcare, our infrastructure, our housing, and doing it in a way that draws down our carbon emissions to help us get in line with the IPCC standards, we're talking about realistically $10 trillion over 10 years.
$10 trillion. So how are we so far apart? $10 trillion. Is what progressives actually want. And what did we actually get? 2.5. And barely scratching the surface of what needs to be done. Again, simply removing, you know, as far as like fixing up, we're just going to get rid of, we're going to get rid of lead pipes. Like Ron Klain says, we're going to get rid of lead pipes and achieve national broadband. Great. So we're just going to get rid of things that for decades have now been poisoning us. Like that's the bar. Like, okay, we'll just remove those. That's great. Now we're going to put in PVC piping and we're good to go. Our infrastructure.
Here I go. I'm going to be negative again. I know there's a lot of positive stuff that was just said. And I know that, you know, some of this stuff is good, but you know, one of the things that she said in that whole interview was that, you know, the first stimulus with the $1,400 check just really helped people, you know? And so now they've moved on. And they're focused on this infrastructure bill, but there are still people that need stimulus. So it's like, why, now they're just moving on and all the focus is going to be on that. And it's like, we're not going to worry about the people anymore. We're going to worry about this infrastructure. I understand infrastructure is very, very important, but she's saying that they're going to use their power over this infrastructure bill. Why didn't they use the same power for the stimulus? Why didn't they use the same power for the $15 minimum wage? It's like, that's the problem that I have, is that now it's going to be, we're strong. We're going to, you know, throw out these numbers. We're going to be powerful, but they weren't powerful for the people that when it really matters. And it still matters. People still need stimulus. They still need help.
Well, and that's like what we talked about yesterday, right? David Sirota's piece in, he said, you know, it's because the right wing of the Democratic Party is running the show. I mean, it's the Joe Manchins. It's the Kristen Sinemas. It's those people who've been driving the narrative. They've been saying, Joe, we want to go smaller. We want, you know, we don't want minimum wage in here. We want it. And progressives had no backbone. They could have threatened to not support the stimulus unless $15 an hour minimum wage was included. They didn't. They could have moved the needle on that. And now progressives are like, they're upset about it. They're like, oh, okay, but why weren't you pushing beforehand on this? You have an opportunity to push on this.
Yeah, it's like you'll push for $10 trillion on infrastructure, but you wouldn't even push for what, five for pandemic relief or stimulus?
Yeah, and the big question here, and we should clarify something, which is that there's supposed to be two bills, right? This is the infrastructure piece, and then there's going to be this next thing in a few weeks. But the real fear from progressives, as I'm reading their tweets this morning and reading some of the tea leaves of progressives that I follow and I'm friends with, they're saying what we're worried about is that we may never get that second package, that there's a lot of support right now to to get, you know, to get something done. And if we pass this infrastructure bill and we don't then also pass child tax credits, because none of that's in this, right? Stimulus checks, child tax credits, anything for student loan forgiveness, social security increases, any of that is not in this bill. That's supposed to come in a few weeks, the second part, 2.0, right? As Biden said, this is the jobs piece we're announcing tonight. The next piece we'll announce in a few weeks. But progressives are nervous because we were here before. Remember Nancy Pelosi telling us that she would get retroactive pay taken care of? She was going to get increases. We're going to get it taken care of. We'll get retroactive done. We'll get it all done. Did it get done? No, it didn't.
Well, and you have Pelosi.
She said, we'll get it done later.
You have Pelosi saying, you know, that they're going to be dealing with this till July. They're going to go on break in August. So it could be September. Let's say in a perfect world, in September, they'll come back around to stimulus. So it's like, look at all these months through the summer months that people are going to be suffering and dealing with this. And they're going to be focused on this and only this and saying how progressive it is and how we're going to push. This is the best bill we've ever passed. We're going for $10 trillion. We're going to fight, fight, fight. And it's like people are still hurting. It's like, well, we don't pay attention to that. You know, we'll keep tweeting about that. You guys need Med for All. You need this. We'll tweet about that. But we're actually going to fight on this infrastructure bill.
Right. We're going to really push hard for infrastructure. I mean, the fact that you have Joe Manchin saying he would support $4 trillion, right? $4 trillion, and they're starting at 2.5? So he will support $4 trillion when it involves roads, bridges, et cetera, back home in West Virginia. But when it comes to getting stimulus checks to the American people, he won't fight for that. So everyone watching right now, just remember how these politicians fight. Like, what are they fighting for? They're fighting for infrastructure because they get to put their names all over these projects. You know, the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez Memorial Bridge, right? You get to put your name on these museums and parks and bridges and all of these roads and all of these things.
You know, poll the people.
What about stimulus?
poll the people. Hey, people, would you rather see us focus on this infrastructure bill right now, or you want us to continue to work on stimulus until you're taken care of? Until we get something worked out that you're getting the help that you need, what do you want us to focus on? What percentage of people do you think would vote on stimulus?
Yeah, and by the way, I wish Rachel would have pushed her on this question about $1,400 stimulus. Like, oh, it was $1,400 because you guys didn't stand up and push for $2,000. Like, what happened to that? What happened to that? Remember, Rachel Maddow is part of the machine, right? She's a part of the corporate machine. So she does not want people to get stimulus checks. That's not where her head is at. What she wants is her, you know, corporate power. She wants Democrats to make sure that the big corporate interests are taken care of. Keeps her employed. Keeps her making, what is it, $7 million a week or something?
Well, and I see people, stimulus. And everybody's saying stimulus, but some people are saying, why not both? You know, you could do both. And that's true. They could do both, but they are so... They can barely focus on one thing, and make no mistake, you know, if that $10 trillion, you guys remember when we saw the other bill, how much stuff was going overseas, how much stuff was going to all these other places. You can probably bet that a lot of that infrastructure money will probably be for infrastructure in other countries that we've torn apart. I mean, we're assuming that that's all going to go to the U.S. infrastructure, and it's probably not.
No, we'll justify it that we're going to build a port in Yemen, you know, for our ships or whatever. I mean, that, yes. And by the way, we still have like 2 more months till we probably even see a bill. So now they're all starting to work on these committees. They're starting to throw around their ideas, right? And then they'll put pen to paper over the next few months. We'll finally see this bill. It might hit, maybe we'll see it by July. They want to pass it by July 4th or so. Great. Then what? Then we're going to wait in the summer. We got recess. They're off on vacation. When are we going to see the second piece of this? Like, in my mind, arguably more important right now. Making sure that people aren't kicked out of their homes for rental assistance. Like, I was on, like, last night looking at a couple of different states' websites for rental assistance programs to see what's available. You can't find anything. I mean, it's like, nah, not even available. People are losing their homes. We're facing a housing crisis, folks. We are facing a massive housing crisis, and it's going to get really bad by the fall. with all of these people who are going to be defaulting on their mortgages. It's going to be a foreclosure field day in the United States. So just in time for fall, just in time for maybe they'll get a second stimulus package done by the fall, when you see jobs numbers like this, this is what's going to happen. There's going to be less and less appetite for us to do anything big by the end of the summer. When you have jobs numbers and reports like this with a smiling Joe Biden and the news media is like, look how good the economy is doing. Look how good the stock market is doing this morning. You know, we don't need another stimulus. Everything's doing great.
Those 20 million people facing eviction are going to be fine. Look at these numbers.
Yeah, look at all the people about losing their homes, but look at Wall Street. As Trump liked to say, you know, Wall Street, same thing as people who are losing their homes, like the same, right?
You know,
so that's how I gauge my success. If Wall Street's doing well, then that means that people aren't losing their homes.
Think about it this way. What's happening is the American people are losing their homes and Wall Street's buying them.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we mentioned a few months ago, and I played you the soundbite of BlackRock CEO, forget his name off the top of my head, who gleefully talked about they've got billions of dollars set aside right now so that when you lose your home, guess who's going to buy it? Wall Street. They're going to pounce on it.
For pennies
like
on the dollar.
Like a cat on a cotton ball.
And they're not going to buy it for what we would buy it for. They're going to get a huge, what are they going to get it for, the taxes or something, like a lien or whatever? They get it for next to nothing.
Oh, yeah, they'll buy it for pennies on the dollar. 30, 40 cents on the dollar. Banks do not want to own property, so they will pick it up from banks. Banks do not want to be property managers. They learned their lesson in 2008 on that. Banks holding onto these properties, and then suddenly there's a roof issue. The bank has to go and fix it out of their pocket. They do not want to be landlords. But Wall Street is happy to. And these big, big hedge funds that buy up all these properties, like BlackRock and others, are waiting. They're just waiting. They're just like sitting there salivating, watching all this unfolding.
It's like Mr. Burns. Excellent.
Excellent, yes. Yes, when all of you lose your homes, we're going to pounce and buy up your homes. We've been here before. It's like just, you know, like we don't learn our lesson. Stuff just continues to repeat. It's unbelievable. So, you know, when you look at what's going on, I want to talk about Bitcoin. I want to talk about the U.S. dollar a little bit here before we wrap things up. I mean, right now, Bitcoin this morning, overnight, a new record last night. So I am I'm a Bitcoin investor. Went over 60,000 for the first time last night. New record. And look at these numbers. And many experts are now saying, and economists are seeing this as an alternative for gold and an alternative for U.S. currency, which it's perfect timing, isn't it? It's perfect timing for the people's currency to finally take off. I mean, because this trend has been partially fueled by the pandemic and the economic uncertainty that has come with it. Bitcoin, of course, is being viewed as a safe haven asset, and it's being more and more referred to as digital gold. I've been calling it that. Even the Fed chief Jerome Powell last week saying that he thinks it's a great substitute for gold. And one of the main reasons for this, you even see Jim Cramer from Mad Money. He's now moved out of gold, or a portion of gold, like he's keeping certain amount, but he's also moving now for the first time into Bitcoin. So he's got gold and Bitcoin. One of the main reasons for this is that, of course, it has a finite supply. There's only 21 million Bitcoins that will ever exist, ever. And it's not subject to inflationary economic practices like quantitative easing or just throwing money at this or stimulus packages or anything like that. One crypto expert said, I think we should expect this trend to continue in 2021 and after COVID. This time, this is not a bubble, but a permanent market shift with Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies entrenching as a fully fledged investment asset class. So Bitcoin making some pretty big moves overnight. If you want to get some free Bitcoin, here's how you do it. Now follow along with me. Here's how you do it. You go to morninginvest.com/Webull. Okay. And what you do is you get two free stocks when you sign up for free. It's free to open. It's a brokerage account. So you'll have to put in, like, you know, driver's license and prove you're a real human being. They have a lot of security. And then you'll get two free stocks between, see these prices, between up to valued up to that $1,600. Then take those stocks and sell them if you don't want them and transfer, because they also have Bitcoin at Webull. Then transfer it into Bitcoin. And that's how you get free Bitcoin. And what's great about Bitcoin is that you can buy partial. You don't have to buy one Bitcoin, which is 60,000. You can buy $100 of Bitcoin. You can buy $10 of Bitcoin. And you can do that for free. So check them out. Go to morninginvest.com/Webull to get some of that free stock and then transfer it over and get some free Bitcoin with it. We've had a lot of you do that, by the way. So awesome. Awesome for taking advantage of that. And since it's free. But the U.S. dollar, concerns this morning about the U.S. dollar, right? We know that it's rising, but why? Why? What's going on here? Ron Paul, of course, former presidential candidate, Congressman Ron Paul, who was one of the few, if only, to accurately predict the 2008 collapse, says that we are in the midst of the dollar collapse right now. So pay attention to Dr. Ron Paul, once again, calling out what's going to happen in this economy.
And Dr. Paul, now there's concern that China and Russia are going to push to challenge the petrodollar, which again serves to chip away at the dollar status as a global reserve currency. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, if they get away with that, and I can understand why they would want to do that, but if they can do that, that's not a reflection of the great strength of China and the evilness of China. It's the fact that we messed up our currency here. I mean, the dollar is weak, not because the Chinese are manufacturing more stuff and selling us more stuff. I mean, they have a policy where it does give them advantage on this. Quite frankly, though, I don't think it's going to be next week or next month or next year that all of a sudden the Chinese are going to replace the dollar. The dollar is going to self-destruct. And what's going to replace it, you know, is up for grabs. Who knows what's going to happen? But I think that to always look and say, well, it's somebody else's fault. Besides, when I was in Washington, I always assumed, well, I don't even have a responsibility for China. I can't make them change their policy. But it's our policies that we should be changing. Our responsibility, our moral responsibility is, you know, protecting our country, taking care of ourselves, protecting the value of the dollar. But everything so far, Michelle, that we've been talking about is destructive to the dollar. I mean, how can you have a strong currency when you can spend $3 trillion and think nothing of it? And the markets don't even blink an eye. That's the amazing thing. People are in a daze. And next week, in a couple of months, if they spend the $3 trillion on the infrastructure and it didn't get very far, they'll say, well, let's spend 10. We just didn't spend enough money. Well, it won't work. We're in a position of destroying ourselves by destroying our currency. And we do.
And that's what's happening to the U.S. dollar right now. We're watching it happen. And the Fed is being boxed into a corner. And they have really few options on the table, very few at this point. Either you're going to buy up or, you know, try to buy up bonds, release more bonds, print more money, try to see if China's going to buy more of our bonds. And for what? What are they worth? Get a negative return? Why would anyone want those things? How many of you watching right now would actually want to buy these things? 10-year treasury bond. For what? So you're going to get a negative return against inflation? It's like literally taking your money. You'd be better off just taking your money and ripping it in half, the U.S. dollar. And that's what's happening.
Remember,
and then you see the rise of currencies.
Remember when they burned the Deutschmark in Germany? There's never been a surviving fiat currency that I'm aware of. Like,
right.
They burned it in the fireplace to keep warm.
Yes. As I say often, there's never, ever, ever been a fiat currency that hasn't collapsed. And a fiat currency, of course, is government currency. So, again, look at Venezuela. Look at what's happening in Venezuela. The Bolivar. It's their currency, the Bolivar. It's worthless. So they're printing 1 million Bolivar notes that are worth 50 cents in the United States. And they're using U.S. dollars in Venezuela right now instead of using their own currency, trying to move to a digital currency. Everyone's moving towards a digital currency. And you see these Bitcoin prices overnight closing at an all-time high. as a new sort of standard where the government can't monkey with it. You know, of course, if the governments then try to come in and say you can't, excuse me, you can't, you know, trade Bitcoin, that's one thing the governments could try to do. Like they feel undermined. Like they feel like, oh my gosh, now we are second to this type of currency. That's what's going to start happening, folks. I mean, you have Tesla who bought up like 1.5 billion in Bitcoin. They're now accepting Bitcoin for purchases of Teslas. So now you can pay with Bitcoin. PayPal is now accepting Bitcoin. Mortgage companies are now accepting Bitcoin. Visa is now accepting Bitcoin. I mean, the writing is on the wall. So my question is, what happens when you can pay with Bitcoin for just about everything? Who's going to use a U.S. dollar? And when you know that there's only 21 million in circulation, and there's a finite supply, and where that value can't be blown out of proportion by a government who just wants to print more.
Well, and I mean, a lot
folks, we're in a scary time.
And a lot of people don't realize that the only reason our dollar has any value at all is because that's what oil is traded in. If those countries over there, Russia, China, Saudi Arabia, all those countries, they decide that they're done trading the oil in dollar, that'd be it. That right there would crash our economy.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, and, you know, oil being considered liquid gold, right? Black gold.
Texas tea.
Black gold. So if you've got your money in U.S. dollars, again, I warn you about it. I warn you. I mean, it's worthless. As Ray Dalio says, cash is trash. U.S. cash is trash, and it's getting worse by the minute. So heed Ron Paul's warnings, okay? People did not pay attention to him in 2008. And then he also accurately predicted the collapse of the insurance market. No one was paying attention to him. Because what happens when all those houses go up for foreclosure? Guess what follows after that is the insurance industry. That, and it all happened. And he didn't, no one paid attention to him. People laughed at him. Literally on CNBC during an interview when he predicted and said what's about to happen, they laughed at him. So don't laugh at Ron Paul. I miss Ron Paul.
Me too.
It's interesting. He was always like a voice of reason on that stage when he was running for president. You know, why are we in these foreign wars? Like, why? Why are we in these foreign wars? Makes no sense.
When he was talking about legalizing drugs, and he's like, what, you think if you legalize heroin, everybody's just going to go out and buy heroin?
Right. No, what it does is when you actually legalize drugs, it removes drug crime. It removes violence. It frees up our prisons from 70% nonviolent drug offenders being shoved into prisons. Yeah, like, oh, you legalize heroin? I'm not running out and buying heroin.
Do that by debt. Debt is the big issue.
So, Dr. Paul, is there anything that can be done now to turn this around?
For me, I say the only thing I can do is talk to the people at Kitco when I get a chance.
Spread the message. All right.
Spreading the message is important. I spend a lot of time studying and reading and trying to keep up and understanding better how to explain, you know, what's happening. No, I think it's all philosophical. I have a homeschooling group. To me, it might be the most important thing I did, and I'm never going to see the results of it. But it's to teach the principles of liberty and why the founders were on the right track, and that you cannot substitute it with authoritarianism. I want everything to be voluntary. That way, voluntary, what in thunder is that? That's what, when you get to do anything you want, except you can.
Well, and he's I don't know if you know this, but he's so what we have in this country is called Keynesian economics, and what he is a proponent of is Austrian economics. And so Keynesian is kind of the by force model of economics, and Austrian is by voluntarism.
Right. Yeah, I mean, he's a huge libertarian, right? It's like, you know, don't tell me that I have to get a vaccine. Don't tell me that I have to put on a mask. Don't tell me that I can't, if I don't want to wear a seatbelt, I don't have to. You know, anytime there's any types of those votes in Congress, he always voted against those things. I mean, that's it. That's his track record, you know? So, and, you know, there's always the question about, well, if it's good for the safety of the country, right? Then where do you come down on it? And he still thinks it's a voluntary approach. So that's where he loses a lot of conservatives. That's where he loses, you know, and that's why it's very difficult, I think, for a libertarian to win the presidency just based on that. But it's an important piece of that to have in a debate, certainly on the war front, certainly on ending our incursions in the foreign wars and why in the world are we building military bases around the world. That's something he was a big champion of getting rid of, is mm-hmm. our involvement in foreign wars, you know? So anyway, thank you guys for joining us on the show today. Let's see, we have any super chats to get to today?
Yeah. We've got 13 new members. James Schmidlin, Crystal Menard, Jason Bourne. Welcome, new members. Rachel McLeod, finally got my hoodies. Love them. Trevoria Yerby. Hello, Clayton. I love your show. I want to ask about investing $100. I don't know how to invest or what to do. I'm confused. Can you please help me?
Well, I can't give you financial advice because I'm not a financial advisor, but I can tell you what I would do with $100. So what I would do with $100, if it was my $100, is, you know, it's difficult to invest in real estate with $100, right? Which isn't, I'm a big real estate investor, but I'm also an investor in cryptocurrency for $100. I mean, with $100, you can buy, you know, there are a lot of altcoins right now. So go to this website, okay? Here's what I would do. Go to morninginvest.com/Binance, B-I-N-A-N-C-E. So morninginvest.com/Binance. I set up a special link. Now, you don't want to use the U.S. version of it, in my opinion. I use the international version of Binance for one reason. You get access to different altcoins that you don't get with the U.S. version of the Binance website. So there's the URL you want to go to, morninginvest.com/Binance. Now, that'll take you to the international version of the website. That's what you want. Now, you need to get a VPN, though, to use it, okay? So I know this is a little tricky, but hey, if it was this easy, everyone would be doing it, right? So you use a VPN to access international website like that, okay? So you can use ExpressVPN, you can use IPVanish, which, you know, is a partner of our show. Any one of you want to use. And then with $100, you know, there's a lot of altcoins. What altcoins are really like just coins that are not Bitcoin, okay, and Ethereum, the big ones. Altcoins are just alternative coins that are smaller, way cheaper. And you can literally buy certain coins for like 0.00000005, you know, like literally fractions of a penny in cost. So if you put $100 into that and that goes up a nice chunk, you're able to go from like $100 to a couple, like $20,000-$30,000 in a short amount of time. So I have friends in my trading group who started with $200 and now at $25,000. So, yeah, I would definitely check. That's what I would do is with $100. I mean, you can also use Webull and buy a Bitcoin right there in Webull as well.
Well, I think
you can buy Bitcoin. I think they only have Bitcoin on Webull. I don't think they have any other coins right now. They might have Ethereum, but I'm not sure.
Philip DeFranco just launched. He's an investor in a company. I think it's called Public. That's kind of new. Now they're kind of getting into that too, right? That you can get different currencies there, I believe, as well.
Yeah, exactly. So So Webull, you get two free stocks, and then Public. Here's Public. Let me drop that. If you go to morninginvest.com/public, you get a free stock. And I'm an investor here as well. Like, I have my account where I invest in Public. And what's cool about Public is that it's a social network. So you can follow me over there. Follow me and you can see what I'm trading. So you can see, like, when I make a trade, like, oh, I just invested in Netflix, and then you can see that trade. So it, like, helps you decide, like, you know, if you want to, you can kind of follow along with what I'm investing in. And it's almost like Twitter for trading. It's pretty cool. So anyway, follow me over there. Just go to morninginvest.com/public and you'll get a free stock. You can get a free Apple stock or Tesla. So hope that answers that question. So that was a long-winded answer, but
No worries.
I think it could help a lot of people. So
yeah. Well, yeah, especially right now, if some people have a little extra stimulus money. BK, Dan, love my social estate t-shirt sent pic to team 3 days ago. I think we showed you, BK. If I remember right, I think we might have showed that.
We did. We did show you, BK.
Yeah. Your Imperial Majesty, today is my birthday. Well, happy birthday, Imperial Majesty.
Happy birthday.
Linda Telly, appreciate your show. Thank you. Rumpel Gold, are these just seasonal temp jobs, though, or hired full-time salary jobs?
From what I understand, no, these are not seasonal jobs. These are not seasonal jobs. So let me just go back to the employment numbers. The leisure and hospitality sector, restaurants and bars, added 280,000 new jobs. But there was broad gains across all industries, construction jobs, manufacturing jobs, and these are non-farm jobs. This is good stuff. This is not, there's still some slack in the labor market, but these employment gains are looking pretty good here.
Katie Picano, new member, welcome. Joseph Hawley, in 2017, Gates was the only person in the House regarding child trafficking.
Yeah, I read his super chat during the show. He's the only member of Congress to vote against a child trafficking law. Like, what? Hey, Daddy, what did you do today? You know what I did, son? I voted against a law that would make it illegal for people to steal you and put you and sell you across the state lines. I voted against that law. Oh, gee, Dad.
But I also voted against doing it with raw milk, too, so I'm consistent. Rumpel, yeah. Gold, and we love you, Clayton. Juanita Walker,
you, Rumpel.
Do you think we'll get a fourth stimulus?
I don't know. I mean, at this point, I'm not convinced. I want to see how these arguments go over the next few weeks from progressives. Like, if this thing goes big, yes, maybe we will. But again, when I see jobs numbers like this, and I see progressives having to fight to try to increase a $2.5 trillion package up to where they say they want to be at $10 trillion, I'm not convinced that, although Biden says, look, this, you know, the second one is going to come in a few weeks. So I'm going to reserve judgment. I'm going to reserve judgment until we see a few weeks from now. Like, what is going to happen on that front? Ooh, Tina Standerfer, thank you for your super chat, says, good morning from Everett, Washington. I'm thinking of opening stock and altcoin accounts for each of my grandkids. Could you suggest which ones are best for this? Well, I think the charts and everything that you get from Webull are fantastic. Like, so my suggestion would be Webull. So go to morninginvest.com/Webull, and that would be my suggestion for stock trading, because it's zero commission trades, so you're not paying anytime you trade. You're also getting 2 free stocks when you open those accounts for your grandkids. So just go to the old, well, here's Webull, and you get 2 free stocks when you open it, okay? You'll get either a Starbucks, then you're entered in for a chance to win some premium stocks. Yeah, that's what I would suggest you do. Now, remember, who asked that question? Let me go back to my screen.
That was Tina Standerfer.
Oh, thank you. So Tina, remember, these are brokerage accounts. It's like opening a bank account. So sometimes I get questions where people are like, hey, they want my driver's license. Yes. You have to put that stuff in there because they want to know that you're a real human, okay? And it's like a savings account, so they need to make sure that you're protected. Like, it's not like opening just a Gmail account. Like, it's a brokerage account. So they're going to want, like, your social security number or the social security number of the child that you're opening it for. They're going to want to see an ID so that you're not a fake person. Because, again, it's money, so you got to make sure that you're secure. So, for instance, I had an account the other day where they had suspicious activity. Because I was up overnight doing some trades or something, and they're like, we thought there was suspicious, can you confirm? And I had to send my picture of my passport with, and then they reactivated my account, or they, you know, re-enabled it. And this was not Webull, this was a different bank, but, you know, they have to take these precautions now with cyber hacking. So that on the stock trading piece, Tina, and then on the Coinbase part, I would, like what I was telling you earlier, is the Binance to me is a smart play. You could also do Coinbase is another option. Coinbase.com is pretty easy to kind of get started, but their fees are a lot higher. So that's why I like Binance, because they have altcoins, plus their fees are really, really, really low. So that's my suggestion. Natalie Chavez says, love you guys. Thank you for your super chat. And Big Show, $99.99. Really Big Show says, happy Friday. Enjoy your weekend, Clayton. Thank you so much. Enjoy your weekend, Big Show. Enjoy your weekend, David. Enjoy your weekend to everybody. Thank you guys so much for subscribing to the channel and being a part of our show every day here on the show. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, go get that newsletter.
Alan says, can you open a Webull account with a credit card? I think it has to be, you have to link a bank account. So you need to transfer like $100 from a bank account to Webull. I don't think they let you open it with a credit card.
That makes sense too, because if you ever have to withdraw, they have to have a way to send it back, and they can't send it back to your credit card.
Exactly. And they don't want fraud, right? So if someone steals somebody's credit card and opens a Webull account and then starts trading on somebody's stolen credit card, can you imagine the nightmare that would be? So I don't think that's probably why they don't allow that, you know? So anyway, all right. Much love to all of you guys. Have a great weekend, everyone. I hope you guys get some rest, relaxation, and we will see you back here bright and early on. We're gonna have a special thing on Sunday. I want you to, if you are an investor, you're interested, we're gonna be working on something very special for a Sunday special release of a video. So please be sure to set that alert. Subscribe, and make sure your trading accounts are set up today. I'm just telling you, because you're gonna want to pay attention to a company that I am excited about. So much love to all of you. We'll see you back here later. Peace.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.